Welcome to the Cancer Connect Care Workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star and then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, Kate, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect workshop, Advances in the Treatment of Lung Cancer. Today's program is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and many other cancer organizations, and it really is because of your interest in the program and our collaborative organizations that we've reached so many of you on the call today. Now, we have over 691 participants on this call. It's kind of a bit of a record, so thank you all for participating. And we have a lot of participants, of course, from the United States, from all different areas and regions of the United States, but we also have international participants from Australia, Brazil, Canada, China, France, Germany, Venezuela, and the United Kingdom. So you really come from all over the world to join us today. I'd like to turn your attention for a moment to the materials you received from Cancer Care. In those materials is information about our speakers and the topics they'll be covering, as well as all of those different collaborating organizations as a resource for you, as helpful resources for you to kind of call upon. And there also is an evaluation form, and I would ask you to take a moment and complete that evaluation form when you think about it, who but each of you can really best tell us what you would like us to offer. The topics you'd like us to cover is very important. You're really our best consultants in terms of the programs that would be most helpful to you. So please do let us know what would be most helpful to you, and we will try very hard to implement those programs. Indeed, today's program is one that many of you have requested, and so we try to offer it more than once a year based on your recommendations. Now, today's program was made possible by grants from Genentech, a member of the Roche Group, Celgene, Pfizer Oncology, and Eli Lilly and Company. And I really want to thank them for their support of the program and for their corporate collaboration to make this program possible. Now, we have wonderful speakers on our program today, and I want to begin by introducing our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Mark Chris. And Dr. Chris is Chief Thoracic Oncology Service. He's the William and Joy Rain Chair in Thoracic Oncology at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, and he's Professor of Medicine at Medical College of Cornell University. Dr. Chris is going to present an overview of lung cancer. He's going to present a standard of care for non-small cell lung cancer and squamous cell lung cancer, as well as new treatment approaches for non-small cell lung cancer and squamous cell lung cancer. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Dr. Chris.
Oh, thank you, Carolyn, and thank you all for joining us today. I'd like to begin first by taking some liberties with the title of today's presentation, because the truth is, I think the more we've learned about this group of illnesses, the more we've come to understand that the term lung cancer really doesn't reflect what we are facing here. The more proper term is lung cancers. We know that this illness is very different in the people that it affects, and no matter what, and it really defies being called one disease. And I think it's very helpful to realize the uniqueness of the different diseases that we face, the differences in the illness in individual persons with this illness, and I encourage everybody to think of this as lung cancers rather than lung cancer. And biologically, we know that is the case too. The more we study these tumors, and I'll get more into the genetic testing that's been done to try to elucidate the different kinds of lung cancers that we're trying to treat. The second thing is just to make it absolutely clear: lung cancers are those cancers that begin in the lung. Cancer of any site can metastasize or spread to the lung. In that case, if you say you had a cancer that began in the colon and spread to the lung, it is not now lung cancer. It is still colon cancer, but it has spread to the lung. Lung cancers are those cancers that began in the lung and can spread to other sites, but cancer is treated based on its site of origin. There are really three kinds of lung cancers, so-called small cell lung cancer, a second kind called adenocarcinoma, and that's the most common kind of lung cancer. Probably 60 or so percent of people with lung cancers have adenocarcinomas. And the last type is squamous cancers or squamous cell carcinomas of the lung. These are about 20%. So together, over 90% of lung cancers are those three types. How are these cancers defined? Well, the first thing is that you cannot have the diagnosis of cancer without a biopsy. All those three types of lung cancer are diagnosed by a pathologist who looks at a tissue specimen that has been removed from some part of the body, sent to them. They look under the microscope and see the presence of cancer cells of those various types. And again, just a reminder to everyone on the call, there is no scan, there is no blood test that can diagnose lung cancers. It can only be diagnosed by a biopsy and only be diagnosed by a pathologist that looks at these tissues removed under a microscope. The second thing we do now, and again, I'll speak about this in greater detail later on, is we take those cancer cells that are removed at the time of the biopsy and look at specific genetic characteristics of the cancer cell. And by establishing those characteristics and in essence knowing what makes that cancer cell tick, we can make better treatment decisions for individuals with the illness. So this so-called genetic testing that we do is very critical in choosing the best treatment. I caution everybody, too. I know genetic testing for cancer has been in the news lately. What we're talking about here is not cancer, not genetic changes in your cells, things that would make you more susceptible to cancer. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about changes in the cancer cells, the tumor cells, and these are not things that you can pass on to your offspring. It's not things that you inherited from your parents. All cancers and lung cancer, a part of that, are determined, the treatment rather of lung cancers is determined by so-called staging. Staging is a vocabulary or a language that the medical specialists use to decide on either the size of the cancer or on its location or spread within the body. So that term staging, you're going to hear a lot about that as you face this illness. It is a way, or a shorthand, as it were, to determine the size of the cancer that's discovered and its location in the body. Staging is absolutely critical to determine what's the best treatment for cancer of any kind, and lung cancers as an example of that. The common staging tests, again, many of you are quite familiar with them, the CT scan, which is in essence, a snapshot of a tissue of the body, an MRI scan, which looks at the magnetic characteristics of it and then makes a different kind of snapshot, and then the so-called PET scan. There in a PET scan, radioactive sugar is injected into the body, and tissues have various abilities to take up that radioactive sugar. And cancer cells seem to do this more than other tissues, and it's a way of helping to find the location of cancer. Again, a reminder, none of these tests can diagnose cancer. They can assist your healthcare team into making a diagnosis, but the diagnosis comes from a biopsy. No scan can diagnose cancer. How do you treat the cancer? Well, I think the first thing is it's very, very important, and a growing understanding of this concept as well, is that at every point in a patient's illness, we must be very concerned about the supportive care. Looking at what symptoms are affecting the person with the illness and coming up with a plan to deal with those symptoms. It has a lot of different names. It's called supportive care, palliative care. And it's been shown that this approach is very helpful. A, it deals with the problems an individual has been facing in the illness. And it's regardless of stage, whether it's a cancer that's confined to the lung yet is causing serious pain or one that may have spread through the whole body, regardless, you have to deal with the symptoms people are suffering from. And it's, I think, very important that at the beginning of the illness that symptoms and supportive care be addressed. When cancer is confined to the lung, the treatment is surgery, sometimes with chemotherapy. When cancer is found only in the lung and the adjacent structures, generally lymph nodes or the tissues right next to the lung, the treatment there is usually always chemotherapy nowadays, supplemented by radiation or surgery. And the team you put together will decide which of these treatments are best for you, which should be chosen, what the order of the treatments should be, and exactly what type of treatments are best for you based on the size and location of your cancer. For cancer that has spread, however, from the lung to other organs of the body, the treatment there is some kind of a systemic therapy, and for virtually all patients at some time in their illness, they would receive the so-called chemotherapy, a chemotherapy directed against the lung cancers and killing those cancer cells. The type of chemotherapy is chosen first and foremost by the appearance of the cancer cells under the microscope. Small cell lung cancers are treated with a very standard kind of chemotherapy, a drug called etoposide and then a drug called cis or carboplatin. Squamous cell cancer is also treated with cis or carboplatin with either a gemcitabine or a drug like paclitaxel, docetaxel, or albumin-bound paclitaxel. And adenocarcinomas, again, treated with cis or carboplatin plus any of those drugs that I mentioned to you. There's another drug that's very helpful in treating adenocarcinomas, and that's the drug pemetrexed. It works much better in adenocarcinomas than in either small cell or squamous cell. So the determination of having adenocarcinoma will lead to the choice of those therapies. I keep talking about this genetic testing that's been done. So what happens nowadays, and it's really a standard of care now, is that when cancer is diagnosed, in addition to the pathologist confirming cancer, looking at the, at it under the microscope, finding out what cell type it is, material is sent to in the pathology department to a specialist in molecular medicine, and they look at specific gene damage that can elucidate a therapy. This is most commonly done now in adenocarcinomas, and it is if you have a mutation in the so-called EGFR gene, the treatment erlotinib is recommended. If you have a rearrangement in the ALK gene, ALK gene, there's a drug called crizotinib that's recommended. And these drugs, when they're targeted to a specific genetic damage, are quite effective. Nearly every patient derives some benefit from those drugs, and that benefit usually lasts from 1 to 2 years. So it's really a great it's a great way of fighting the cancer. What we're doing now is extending this concept to other drugs, to other genetic targets, and other subtypes. In the last minute or so, new treatment approaches, this idea that we've now made standard in the treatment of adenocarcinomas, we're moving now to squamous cell cancers and also to small cell lung cancers. We're looking to do these genetic tests to better hone in on chemotherapy. We're also trying, again, to use immune approaches as well. I think Dr. Goldberg may have a word to say about this after me. We've now found ways to, in essence, rev up the immune system or to take away the blockade of our own immune system by the cancer cell to let our own immune system fight the cancer. This drug called nivolumab that many of us have been testing and studying now that has been shown to have benefit and one in the development process now, and hopefully if clinical trials continue in the way they're going, will be available shortly. So in summary, lung cancers are a group of diseases defined by what the pathologist sees under the microscope and what the molecular pathologist sees in the cancer cells, treatment determined by stage, and a treatment that can help virtually every patient in terms of relieving symptoms, controlling the cancer, lengthening life, and in an ever-growing number of patients, curing them and making them candidates for our survivorship program. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Chris, for just a very informative and really outstanding presentation and overview for this program today. Thank you. And I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A part of this program. Thank you. And our next speaker is Dr. Sarah Goldberg. And Dr. Goldberg is Assistant Professor of Internal Medicine, Medical Oncology, Yale Cancer Center. And Dr. Goldberg is going to address the role of targeted treatments in chemotherapy, clinical trials, how research contributes to your treatment options, and managing side effects and pain. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Dr. Goldberg.
Thank you so much, Carolyn. Well, Dr. Chris gave you a wonderful introduction to lung cancers and really started the discussion off nicely about treatment options in lung cancers. And I'm specifically going to talk to everyone about targeted therapies and chemotherapy and their role in the treatment of lung cancers. So again, Dr. Chris discussed some of this, but I will hopefully be able to take you through these different treatment options to help you understand where we are currently and where we're going in terms of clinical trials and newer therapies that are coming along and how these treatments really are able to help more and more patients every day. So first, to talk about targeted treatments and chemotherapies. So the role of these treatments, both of which are considered systemic therapies, really depends on a few things that Dr. Chris discussed already. So the most important thing really is the type of lung cancer that is present. Again, the most common types being adenocarcinoma, squamous cell carcinoma, and small cell lung cancer. Additionally, genetic characteristics of the cancer is also very important in determining the role of these treatments. The stage is, of course, very important, and as Dr. Chris mentioned, stage meaning where the cancer is in the body. And finally, also very important is how the person with the lung cancer is feeling and functioning every day. That also can really contribute to our ability to determine what treatments are best for that person. So chemotherapy in lung cancer can be used in a few different ways, and depending, again, on the type and the stage of disease. So chemotherapy can be used in what's called the adjuvant setting, or as adjuvant therapy, which means it can be given after someone has undergone surgery for lung cancer. So following the surgery, chemotherapy may be given, called adjuvant therapy. It's sometimes also given as what's called neoadjuvant therapy, meaning that it's given prior to surgery. And both of those both of those situations, the role of the chemotherapy is to reduce the chance that the cancer returns after the surgery. Chemotherapy is also sometimes used as what's called concurrent therapy, meaning it's given at the same time as radiation. This is sometimes done before surgery with chemotherapy and radiation given together as neoadjuvant therapy. And sometimes chemotherapy and radiation are given together without plans for surgery. They're given together as definitive treatment for lung cancer. And then finally, chemotherapy is commonly used in lung cancer that is advanced or is stage 4, and the role in that setting is to help people with lung cancer feel better, improve their symptoms, and help them to live longer. There are many types of chemotherapy. Dr. Chris mentioned several of them, and the choice of which one specifically to use depends on many of the factors that we both have discussed already, and a medical oncologist is an important person to help decide which is the best chemotherapy to use for each individual patient. So I'd like to now turn to targeted therapies. So over the last few years, there have been several targeted therapies in lung cancers as well as other cancers that have really emerged and become part of our treatment options for this disease. And so for the most part, we use targeted treatments in advanced lung cancer. That's how it's been best studied so far. Sometimes doctors use targeted therapies for patients who have earlier stage cancers as well, and there's more and more trials going on now to really understand how best to use these treatments. So what is the definition of a targeted treatment? It's a therapy or a medication that specifically goes after or targets a certain characteristic of the cancer. And as Dr. Chris mentioned, these characteristics are often genetic characteristics. So when a cancer is found to have this target or this genetic mutation, the targeted therapy is sometimes, many times, more often effective than chemotherapy. And that's really because the targeted therapy is going to the root of the problem in that particular cancer. So it's a much more precise and specific way to treat the cancer than chemotherapy can be. And then sometimes because of that, people will call it personalized medicine or personalized therapy. So to summarize the targeted therapy piece, in order for a targeted therapy to be successful, the cancer has to have the target present. This can often be tested on cancers by sending a piece of the tissue or the tumor that was removed from the patient during the biopsy process for molecular or genetic testing. And then the other thing that's important is, of course, that a medication is available that can target that specific abnormality. So you've already heard about erlotinib for EGFR mutations. So this is a perfect example of a targeted therapy because some lung cancers have an EGFR mutation present that can be a target of this drug, erlotinib. And when erlotinib is used, in lung cancer that has this EGFR mutation, the cancer cells die and the tumors shrink and the therapy can be very, very effective. So these days, medical oncologists are routinely testing patients' cancers for certain mutations, and if that mutation is found, the decision may be made to use the targeted therapy instead of a chemotherapy if there's one available. So currently, we only have a few of these targeted therapies available for a subset of patients with lung cancer, but I think that in the coming years, that subset is going to get larger and larger, and then hopefully one day, anyone with lung cancer and other cancers will have this targeted therapy as an option in their treatment plan. So I'd like to turn to clinical trials and how this may be something that could be helpful as part of your treatment options. So there, as you've heard already, there are many standard options for people with lung cancer, and they can often be extremely successful and can improve symptoms and help people live longer and improve cure rates. Sometimes those treatments, unfortunately, are not enough to control the cancer, and sometimes standard treatments may work and then stop working. So that's when clinical trials are a really great option for certain people. So what is a clinical trial? It's a form of research that tests whether a certain medication or a treatment can work well for a patient with a particular disease. So in the case of lung cancer, clinical trials can test existing therapies that may already even be FDA approved, but they're trying the treatments in a different manner, either a different dose or in a different combination. And then often trials are testing medications that are not yet standard treatments, but maybe one day if that trial is successful. And this really is the only way for us to understand and develop better and newer treatments for lung cancer or any other disease. And so there are different phases of clinical trials. You may have heard of phase 1, 2, or 3 trials. Phase 1 is the earliest phase of trial. Usually this is very new drugs that are being tested that haven't been tested before in people. Phase 2 trials are those where phase 1 trials are successful and the drug then moves on to phase 2, and it's starting to look at whether the treatment is effective in patients with a particular disease or sometimes with a particular target. And then phase 3 trials are usually the largest trials. They can include several hundred patients, and this is where we really compare standard treatments to newer treatments and try to really understand whether they're better. And so clinical trials offer great opportunities to be treated with a medication that otherwise wouldn't be available because it's not standard practice. And that can include chemotherapy, targeted therapies, and then, as you heard a little bit about before, immunotherapy. And this is, I think, one of the most exciting things in lung cancer research right now is immunotherapy. It's a relatively new treatment, only having been tested in the last few years in lung cancer, and we're really just starting to see some of the information from these trials emerging in the last year or so. So as you've heard, immunotherapy tries to allow your own body's immune system to fight the cancer instead of directly killing the cancer, as chemotherapy or even targeted therapy does. And this looks like a very promising treatment in lung cancer potentially, and there's still many trials ongoing to really understand this treatment better. So I'd like to now briefly talk about management of side effects and pain. Of course, our goal in treatment of lung cancer is to kill the cancer cells and to help people live longer and improve cure rates. But management of side effects from treatments and of pain and other symptoms from the cancer itself are also, of course, very, very important in what we do. And so the best way to help manage these symptoms is to first make the symptoms known to your doctor and care team so that people can try to help. There's many ways to manage symptoms from cancer and cancer treatments. There's several medications, newer ones even over the last couple of years, that are really effective in treating nausea and pain and other symptoms. Sometimes radiation or procedures, including sometimes surgery, are really helpful for treating certain symptoms from cancer. And then really if there's several options in terms of medication and treatment, so if something is not working for you, being open and discussing this with your care team is so important to really be able to get on top of these symptoms. Very often people's symptoms can be very, very well controlled, and it's not something that you should be suffering with. So I think I've probably gone over my time. There's a lot to discuss. There's a lot of really exciting things happening in research in lung cancer these days. And so I'm happy to take questions at the end if there's other things that are on people's minds.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Goldberg. That was really just a very excellent presentation and very comprehensive and really very clear in really spelling out the meaning of the targeted therapies and the immunotherapy and really what's on the horizon. So, and in clinical trials, just really making it very clear what they are. So thank you for that very clear presentation. And I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. And our next speaker is Dr. Maria Werner-Wasik. And Dr. Wasik is professor, residency program director, Department of Radiation Oncology, Thomas Jefferson University Hospital. And Dr. Werner-Wasik is going to address the role of radiation oncology, communicating with your healthcare team, and quality of life concerns. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Dr. Werner-Wasik.
Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to be talking to such a large audience. I am a radiation oncologist, and I've been doing this job for at least 18 years. And I must say that most patients with lung cancer will need the services of radiation oncologists at some point of their disease, either at the beginning or maybe later on. As it was mentioned here before, chemotherapy or biologic therapies are systemic therapies, meaning that they work when administered to the patient either orally or intravenously in the entire body of the patient, whereas radiation therapy is different. It is a local treatment. In other words, radiation therapy works where we aim the radiation beam at, not at the entire body. Radiation therapy is given for lung cancer mostly with external beam radiation therapy, meaning with high-energy X-rays coming from outside of the patient into his or her body. And these high-energy X-rays are produced by a variety of radiation machines. The most common is called linear accelerator. It's a garden variety radiation machine, and there are some varieties of it. Many of you might have heard the terms of gamma knife or cyber knife and so forth, and I will explain how those are used talking about particular stages of lung cancer. So I thought I would go through different stages or circumstances where radiation therapy is useful. A common scenario for radiation oncologists is to treat patients with stage 4 lung cancer or metastatic lung cancer, which may be located in different areas of the body. And the role of radiation will be to alleviate or eliminate symptoms. And commonly, we would irradiate whole brain for those patients who have metastasis or spread of the tumor to the brain, with resulting improvement in headaches, improvement in local weakness of one or two extremities, improvement of speech, and a general improvement in well-being. In addition to whole brain radiotherapy for diffuse disease in the brain, a local type of radiotherapy called radiosurgery, has nothing to do with surgery, it's just focused radiation, is being used more and more commonly, either in conjunction with whole brain radiation or without it, for localized few tumors within the brain. And for this particular radiosurgery or focused radiation, a commonly used machine is a machine called a gamma knife. Also, a stereotactic linear accelerator or linear accelerator, a standard machine which is adapted to radiosurgery, can be used, and the results of such machine in comparison with gamma knife are actually equivalent. It is controversial whether patients with brain metastasis should start with whole brain or radiosurgery as an initial treatment. I would usually indicate that whole brain may be a better option for lung cancer if there is many spots in the brain. Radiation therapy is very commonly used for bone pain, as already mentioned, and is quite effective in about 70% or so of cases. The bone pain will either be eliminated or will decrease, therefore allowing limitation of painkillers, which is important because many painkiller drugs, mostly narcotic medications, will have numerous side effects such as constipation and sleepiness and so forth. So by decreasing pain with radiotherapy, we may also be able to lower the doses of painkillers. Many times, radiation therapy to the chest is used for the primary tumor in the lung. And again, most often we would achieve shrinkage of the tumor and control of such symptoms as coughing up blood. Radiation therapy is extremely effective for that particular indication. It's able to control what we call hemoptysis or coughing up blood in over 85% of cases. It can also help chest wall pain related to the invasion of the tumor into the chest wall or ribs. The very common scenario for radiation oncologists would be to treat a patient with so-called stage 3 lung cancer, locally advanced, which was also commented upon, during the course of so-called chemoradiotherapy, which is a combined treatment of chemotherapy given under the direction of medical oncologists and radiation therapy under the direction of radiation oncologists. That requires a well-functioning team of physicians and a multidisciplinary collaboration. For stage 3 lung cancer, which is the type of tumor where we see involvement of the lymph nodes in the middle of the chest, so-called mediastinum, radiation therapy is given usually every day for 5 days a week for a total of 6 weeks or so. Until recently, we believe that giving longer course of radiation to higher doses, over 7 to 8 weeks of radiation, may be beneficial, but the recent clinical trials, and again the importance of clinical trials illustrated here, seem to indicate that actually giving a shorter course of 6 weeks of radiation only to a dose of 60 gray may be better than those longer courses. Side effects of radiotherapy when given to the chest in conjunction with chemotherapy are usually mild, but one common side effect patients need to know about is something called esophagitis or painful swallowing due to the irritation of the esophagus or swallowing tube. And that's a temporary side effect, which is fairly easy to control and resolves readily after radiation therapy is completed. Let's talk now about management of stage 1 lung cancer. Stage 1 is just a single nodule of the tumor in the lung without any involvement of any lymph nodes. And traditionally, it has been treated by surgery, by removal of the lobe of the lung in which this lung tumor sits, or entire lung, and that still remains standard of care. However, there are some patients who cannot undergo surgery for lung cancer, even for stage 1, due mostly to poor lung function or to other problems such as cardiac problems, for example. And those so-called medically inoperable patients these days have a very exciting possibility of being treated with focused high-dose radiation, which is frequently called SBRT, or stereotactic body radiotherapy, where in contrast to giving this 6 or 7 weeks of daily treatments, we only give 3 to 5 sessions or fractions of radiation, very large doses of radiation, which are possible due to the advancement in technology. And they are able to achieve extremely high local control and elimination of the tumor they are aiming at. And again, several radiation machines are used for that purpose. One of them is a CyberKnife, the other one is stereotactic linear accelerator, and the use of IMRT, or intensity modulated radiation therapy, or VMAT, which is the ARC IMRT, are being advertised and recommended by many. At this point, it is not clear whether one machine has a particular advantage over the other with regard to outcome. They seem to work very well, equally well for SBRT. It is probably more important to look into the expertise of the physician team which is performing SBRT rather than focus on the name of a particular machine. I want to briefly mention the role of radiation therapy in this special type of lung cancer, which is small cell lung cancer, where radiation therapy is used both to treat the chest disease and also for so-called prophylactic cranial radiotherapy to limit the chance of tumor coming back in the brain. And it's extremely effective and was shown to prolong patient survival both in the limited stage and extensive stage small cell lung cancer. And the last comment, it's probably superior to be treated in the institution where the multidisciplinary approach is being used, where both the medical oncologists, radiation oncologists, thoracic surgeons, pulmonologists, and other indispensable team members communicate often and hold common conferences, because many heads usually have better recommendations than one person. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Wernerosek. That was a wonderful presentation and a very clear presentation about the role of radiation oncology and its importance in the treatment of lung cancer. And so I hope that everybody is aware of this and really will take advantage of this very important care for them. And I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A as well. And our next speaker is Donna Wilson. And Donna is a pulmonary clinical nurse specialist. She's fitness coordinator, Integrative Medicine Center, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. And Ms. Wilson is going to address physical activity and nutritional concerns and tips. And I turn the program now over to Ms. Wilson.
Well, thank you very much for asking me today. I think that when I listen to all of this, the most important thing I'm hearing is that we are treating lung cancer longer and longer and longer. So people are staying alive and doing much better. So I go on the perspective that exercise is medicine, and that the first thing I'd like to just really expound on is why you breathe. You breathe because of the muscles on your chest wall. So if you allow your muscles to get weak on the chest wall, and meaning your diaphragm weak, which is responsible for a great effort of your breathing in, then everything becomes an effort because your breathing is an effort. So exercise is just a key factor here. I believe that if you feel intimidated by the word of exercise and fitness, I think the most important thing that I can say to you is keep moving. We know that physical activity improves your fatigue level. It'll decrease your depression. You'll improve your sleep. It'll decrease your breathlessness. And if you want to improve your quality of life, then you really have to move. You really have to exercise. And I think there's been enough studies out there now that we all know that with lung cancer especially and all other cancers, that you do have to exercise to maintain a quality of life. I think that when you say what kind of programs would you do for this, I think the most important thing is, the first and most important is walking. But knowing how to coordinate your pattern of breathing with the exercise. This is a common problem that I find, is that people don't think about their breathing until it's really, you know, there is a problem with the effort. And I think that if you learn how to breathe correctly and always know the power of your breath is to breathe out. You will always breathe in, but the power of your breath is to get the air out, and that's where you're going to get the power to do the exercise. So, for example, when you're on the treadmill or you're on a bike, you really want to work on breathing out with as you increase the effort, whether you go faster or increase the resistance on the bike. If you're doing weight training, upper body weight training, it's extremely important, again, to coordinate your pattern of breathing. I have worked with lung patients now for about 40 years, and I can tell you whether they're with one lung or, you know, partial lung or one diaphragm not working, I've gotten a lot of them to be back to their full quality of life and to do their activities of daily living that they wanted to do. I think that, so I would say that you need to do, from a cardiovascular standpoint, you need to do walking or treadmill walking or biking or some type of, even stair climbing. I mean, we have stairs everywhere in our home. Anywhere you go, you find stairs. As long as you breathe out as you go up the steps, breathe out, that's the power. Strength training is extremely important. Also coordinating everything. And then you don't have to do it every day. I would say if you could try to exercise 3 to 4 times a week, that would be excellent. The American Cancer Society and other people have all said, and a lot of fitness people, that they like to see people exercise 30 minutes a day. It doesn't mean 30 minutes in one sitting. It means that if you did 10 minutes 3 times a day or 2 15-minute intervals, just try to break it up. But it's important to maintain also the flexibility of your upper body. Doing a lot of upper body strengthening and movement of the shoulders, where all your chest muscles and your shoulder muscles and your back muscles are really attached into the shoulder. So really moving, especially after surgery when you feel stiff from those incisions and where the chest tube sites were. They really are quite uncomfortable. So it's important to move. You can do chair yoga. You can do chair aerobics. You can do light aerobics. I would have to tell you, you're not limited in any way. From a nutritional perspective, I think the most important thing is mindful eating and is not to, you know, overeat or to be obese. The Mediterranean diet is probably one of the healthiest diets that we have, fruits, vegetables, lean meats, and fish. Also, decrease your sugar intake. And think about using fruits and vegetables with the lowest level of pesticides. For example, onions and pineapples and avocados and asparagus and peas and mangoes, eggplants. There's lots of things, and all this information is really clear. There is another study that has just come out, and it's going to be presented at the American Society of Clinical Oncology, and it's talking about looking at people, how you can, that people have decreased their risk of cancer because they were physically active. So if you're not active, please do so. Or in your practice, please exercise, tell people to exercise. And I'll be happy to entertain any questions at the end. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Donna. That's a very spirited and wonderful presentation. Thank you, and lots of good information for everybody to incorporate into their day-to-day life. So thank you so much. And I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you. Our next speaker is Wynn Burkle, and Wynn is Director of Social Service Long Island. He's an oncology social worker, and he's Lung Cancer Program Coordinator for Cancer Care. And Wynn is going to address a review of the free psychosocial support services offered by Cancer Care, as well as the role of support groups. And it's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my colleague and friend, Wynn Burkle.
Thanks, Carolyn. You know, I'm sure most of us remember the time we moved into our first new home, maybe even our last new home, and I'm sure we wondered how we were ever going to find our way in this new community or neighborhood. Many of us were probably fortunate enough to get a visit from the welcome wagon, or maybe a very helpful neighbor who helped us find the nearest supermarket, service station, house of worship, school, and all the other services so essential to support our daily life. The more things we were able to connect to in our new neighborhood, the more we felt that we had things under control. You know, being diagnosed with lung cancer is in some ways very much like moving into that new neighborhood. Our cancer pushes us into a strange and sometimes scary new environment, and we really don't know where anything is and what we can do to get some control over a very difficult change in our lives. Cancer Care, in the role of that good neighbor, provides its popular website, lungcancer.org, to better serve people like you. Rather than burden folks with heavy medical jargon, lungcancer.org has been designed as the first stop for people who find themselves in the new and strange neighborhood of lung cancer. Using simple-to-understand language in a user-friendly web page format, lungcancer.org helps patients and those who care for them to learn about the basic facts on lung cancer and its treatment. And there is a special section in the website, lungcancer.org, on clinical trials, which not only helps one learn what they are all about, but also provides a special search tool which can assist in finding the lung cancer clinical trial that matches each patient's individual situation. And if a patient wishes to become involved in a clinical trial, there is a tool that allows them to connect with a specially trained clinical trials manager to help them with that whole process. In addition, lungcancer.org serves as an easy entrance to connect with the many services which Cancer Care has available free of charge for lung cancer patients and those who care for them. These services include education. Cancer Care's many Connect education workshops provide both disease-specific information, such as today's workshop, and workshops on coping with the physical and emotional impact of lung cancer. Cancer Care's well-known Cancer Care Connect booklets are available free of charge and are packed with up-to-date information on treatments and the latest coping strategies to help lung cancer patients and those who care for them. To date, we've distributed over 3.5 million copies of these very popular publications. Cancer Care's main website, www.cancercare.org, provides a wealth of information on cancer topics and serves as an easy-to-use entry point to Cancer Care's many services, including subscribing to its popular free monthly e-newsletter. Another important service is support. Cancer Care's cadre of professionally trained social workers are there to assist folks like you in dealing with the many issues which arise from the diagnosis of lung cancer, including emotional issues in which they assess clients and provide appropriate helpful interventions. There are practical issues such as financial assistance through Cancer Care's Limited Financial Assistance Program and referrals to the Cancer Care Copay Foundation and other financial assistance resources. Resources, referral to the many organizations and agencies established to help lung cancer patients. Resources that help with navigating the system, understanding how to best manage the many new relationships involved in healthcare and communications, as well as social issues dealing with Cancer Care's impact among the family members, our friends, the community, and our workplace. Cancer Care social workers provide this assistance in a variety of friendly settings, such as individual counseling, face-to-face counseling in the New York Tri-State metropolitan area, and online and telephone counseling. Support groups in both face-to-face in the New York Tri-State metropolitan area and online and telephone support groups. And there are separate support groups for caregivers and patients in the case of lung cancer. You know, I can't stress enough, support groups are such a valuable resource for a disease like lung cancer, which causes such strong feelings of isolation and being stigmatized. And there's nothing like a support group to get that sense that we're all in together, to be able to share experiences and knowledge and just get that sense of being part of something and realizing that it's not just you that has those special feelings that have been generated by this difficult situation. You know, I'm sure none of us ever expected to find ourselves moved to the neighborhood of lung cancer, but now that you're here, be assured that Cancer Care, like that good neighbor, is there with you. Connect with us at www.cancercare.org or calling us at 1-800-813-HOPE, H-O-P-E. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Wynn, for that really eloquent description of Cancer Care and our services. And as that good neighbor, we want to be there for all of you as you need our services. Now, I want to thank all of our speakers, and now we have time for questions. We have a lot of time for questions. And I'm going to ask that Kate explain to all of you how to queue up for questions. I'm going to try to take as many of your questions as possible. If for some reason we don't get to your question or you think of a question after the program, you'll simply call Cancer Care at 1-800-813-4673. And we'll give you that number again at the end of the program. But right now we're going to try to take as many of your questions as possible. Kate, can you go ahead and...
Thank you.
Tell us how to queue up for questions and bring all our speakers on board also so that all our lines are open.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one key on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Those of you on the web may submit a question by clicking Ask a Question. Our first question comes from the line of Allison S. Your line is open.
Yes, ma'am. I went through my lung cancer initial treatment with carboplatin and radiation, and for the last 4 years, I've been on Alimta. How long, do you have any data on how long you can stay on Alimta and about the side effects?
Oh, thank you for that excellent question. Dr. Chris, could you address that question?
Sure. Well, this sort of testimony is music to our ears, by the way. And I just want to point out to all the... listeners, is that we've learned and we have very good data to support that once you have evidence of benefit with a drug like pemetrexed, Alimta, continuing it as long as it's safe and the benefit continues is definitely the thing to do. People clearly live longer by continuing that drug and not stopping it after any fixed number of cycles. As it turns out, a huge number of people have been able to stay on this medicine for years and not have any side effects that would limit its use. There have been others that even when the benefit of fighting the cancer persists, do develop some side effects. And the specific side effect we have seen that somehow would sometimes stops you from continuing therapy is swelling in the lower extremities and sometimes a redness over the shins that looks like an infection. Many doctors say this looks like what they call cellulitis or an infection of the tissues, and that is brought on by continued treatment with the pemetrexed. So, and that is treated by stopping that medicine. There are some other side effects that are annoying And it depends on the individual, how serious they are. The pemetrexed can also cause some redness of the eyes and excessive tearing. And just like, at least here in the New York City area, the allergy season we have now, the pemetrexed can also cause some allergy-like symptoms as well. Sarah, do you want to comment on that as well? Well, any other side effects you've seen long-term?
You know, I think the main side effect with pemetrexed and other chemotherapies, especially as you continue on for months or even years, is really fatigue. It's something that people experience when they first start getting chemo and can continue. With pemetrexed, it can be less than with other chemotherapies, which is why many people can be on this drug for a very long time. But that's something that sometimes makes patients or their care teams think about stopping the drug for a period of time because of that or other side effects.
Yeah, and it's truly a joint decision. I think each time you have a meeting with your team, your doctor has to decide, is there sort of some sort of medical reason that it should be stopped, a safety issue? Has it stopped fighting your cancer effectively? And you have to tell your doctor, are the side effects acceptable to you? Do they impede your lifestyle to such a degree that the benefit, the side effects outweigh the benefit?
Thank you. Excellent. And I have a question, actually, for Dr. Dr. Goldberg, the question is from one of our online participants, actually from Ruth, and the question is about immunotherapy, and wanted to know a little bit more about how it works and, is it in clinical trial or is it now standard treatment? Mm-hmm. To say a little bit about that.
Sure. So immunotherapy is something that's very new for lung cancer treatment, and so it's something that many people don't know about because it's so new, really. So immunotherapy is the general term for a group of drugs that use the immune system to fight cancer. So chemotherapy and targeted therapy are systemic treatments. They go either in pills or IV form into the system, into the bloodstream, and directly kill cancer cells. Immunotherapy doesn't directly kill cancer cells with the actual drug. Instead, it removes the cancers. Basically, if cancer can block the immune system from killing it, and so it removes that block. So a patient or a person's own immune system cells are then able to kill the cancer cells. So instead of directly killing the cancer cells, the immune system is doing the job. And so these drugs are now just starting to show themselves as potentially very useful in lung cancer and other cancers as well. Because it's still so new, they're not yet what we would say is FDA approved. They're not standard treatments yet for lung cancer or other cancers. And so the only way to get these drugs are on clinical trials because they're still being tested. They're being tested for appropriate dose, how we use them, when we use them. And so clinical trials are really the only way to have access to these drugs for lung cancer specifically. But I think more and more we're going to see these drugs coming out in trials, and then hopefully one day when the trials have completed, hopefully they will show us good benefit and all patients will have access to the drugs, not just on trials. The names of these drugs that you might hear coming out are things called anti-PD-1 or anti-PD-L1, and the one that I think the only one right now that has a name in lung cancer is nivolumab that Dr. Chris, I think, mentioned as well.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And our next question, Stephanie?
Our next question comes from the line of Carolyn Z. Your line is open.
I was also very interested in the approach where you strengthen the person's immune system because it seems that people are getting cancer not because they lack radiation, lack chemotherapy, or lack surgery, but because something, they're either being exposed to something toxic or they're not being nourished enough or engaging in things that are healthful. So I'm interested, I'm particularly interested, too, in the nurse that was lecturing. And I was curious about what specific foods or specific supplements enhance the ability of, I guess it would be white blood cells, to kill cancer, and what specific things are damaging those things in our system so that these cancers are arising. Because it seems like, at the end of the day, radiation, chemo, and surgery, even if you apply them, the basic underlying substrate of the human being is producing a cancer, and it's not because of lack of these things. So I feel they're all going in the wrong direction, frankly, and that we need to go to this other approach.
Well, thank you for that comment and question. Do any of our speakers want to address that? Donna, do you want to start?
Well, I think from a when you're on any chemotherapy, we really are very conservative here that we do not use any supplements during, because we don't, there's no control over supplements. So we really very rarely suggest that. So that's difficult. I think that diet is to a certain extent, yes, because I think that sugar is not the best, also decreasing the amount of fat you take in. I think a plant-based diet is probably a very healthy diet on some people. But again, a lot of this, we don't have a cancer diet per se. It's just really looking at the Mediterranean diet. And I think, but from an exercise perspective, I have to say that I've seen a huge change in people's performance status and keeping healthy by exercising. I mean, when you start producing different things in the muscle, like actin and myosin and all these things in the muscle, you're going to produce strengthening of the muscle. Therefore, you can then be strong enough to probably tolerate some of the other treatments, but it's not crystal clear exactly how this all works. I have to be truthful.
And may I just add a word about prevention,
yes,
too? I mean, we, when it comes to lung cancers, we have the most well-identified cause of this illness, and that is cigarette smoking. 45 million Americans still smoke. And I have a strong feeling that our listeners today are not smoking or stopped smoking years ago. But we need your help right now, and I'm just focusing on New York City. There are laws being debated now in our city council to further limit the availability of tobacco to young adults, to take tobacco displays away from children and young adults and cut down on smoking, and that will clearly take away the biggest cause, not just of lung cancer, but many, many cancers. And I ask everybody's help in supporting efforts. And if you have a spare minute, at least people here, New Yorkers, please write your city councilman that you support these measures, and that whenever these come up in any of your communities, please make a strong statement that things to stop tobacco use are going to be very critical in eliminating this illness.
Excellent. Thank you. Excellent points. Well, I want to thank all of our speakers. You've really been extraordinary. This has been an amazing call, I have to say. You really have covered a tremendous amount of material on this call, and you've been a winning team, actually, and I can't thank you enough. I also want to thank those who queued up and asked questions, both on the phone and online as well. I do want to just repeat that Cancer Care is available for you to give you all these free services. We actually have a staff of many oncology social workers who are available to talk with you on the telephone and to actually provide counseling to you on the telephone or online, as well as we provide support groups on the telephone online. And we have many different types of groups, so you might want to check those out, both for people living with lung cancer and their caregivers and loved ones. We also offer practical and financial assistance, and we also have many of these workshops, and we have, of course, booklets and fact sheets as well, so that we're a good place to turn to when you're concerned about your issues or worried about something. Don't hesitate to call Cancer Care. Most importantly, as we conclude today's program, I don't want anyone to think that you're alone in coping with lung cancer or with cancer in general. I want you to know that you're part of a community of support, and we're here to help you. And you can simply call us at 1-800-813-4673. And please do that. Please do call us. I want to wish you all a very fine day, and thank you all for participating.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may disconnect. Have a wonderful day.